Hey, so we're going to pull up a PowerPoint to illustrate the sermon today. We're on a series that began with this phrase, "What did I sign up for?" or "This is what I signed up for." We kind of moved that into what it means to follow Jesus. And today we're going to talk about, in order to follow, you have to trust. In order to follow, you have to trust. I guess we should start, number one, with really what it means to follow Jesus and why it's important in our lives. Why it's important in our lives. We talked about already how salvation is more than just accepting that gift of forgiveness that Christ died on the cross to give us. Forgiveness is the first step. It's what brings us back into right relationship with God, accepting what Jesus has done for us. And we know that a lot of people focus on that so they can go to heaven, which is a wonderful thing. But we've been looking at how this thing to follow Jesus is much more than just forgiveness so that we can go to heaven. Much, much more. So what it's about, it's about becoming a disciple. Following Jesus is about growing closer to Him, right? Getting to know Him better. And then also becoming more like Him. Our Wednesday night Bible study folks will attest that it really has been our theme for quite a while, just trying to, you know, learn how to become more like Jesus. And that means really realizing that Jesus was the penultimate man, in that He shows us how to reach our full potential. Becoming like Jesus is really reaching your full potential as a man or a woman. It really is. Made in God's image and His likeness, living on this earth in peace and power. Amen? It's living for Him and with Him. It really is about fulfilling your destiny, fulfilling the destiny that God created you for, your purpose on earth before you go to heaven. Yeah. So that's what it means to live your life as a committed follower of Jesus Christ. But here's the truth, right? You're not going to follow someone you don't trust, and you're not going to trust someone you don't know. So that's the key, you know. Trust, it is said, is kind of like the glue that holds all relationships together. You can't have a committed relationship without trust, right? I liked what Stephen Covey said. He said that trust is the lifeblood of all relationships, of all transactions, and is foundational and fundamental to everything in life. I think that's powerful stuff. I was looking up just really what is going on in our world today, and one of the secular websites said that, you know, trust is proven to be correlated or connected to people's increased participation in community things. Actually, an increase in trust results in a decrease of corruption. That makes sense, right? An increase in resilience when disasters come, a decrease in economic inequality, and even decreases in crime are related to a population's growth in trust. It's also, increase in trust is also directly correlated to increase in health, happiness, and even intelligence, interestingly. Trust. But it's why it's so important to see that today, really, we're witnessing the erosion of trust in our society, right? The erosion of trust. I found this older statistic that just showed from 72 to 2012 how trust in the surveys has really just gone straight downhill. Well, it's no wonder, right? I mean, just look at America and look and think with me about the things that contribute to the erosion of trust in our society. Just think about all the people that have betrayed trust, our trust. You know, it ranges from politicians to pastors, right? I mean, I was kind of appalled looking at the surveys and showing how many people even distrust ministers and how that's decreased over the years. It's a problem, right? From bankers to even fellow believers, from retailers to restaurateurs. How many, you know, besides me, wonder a little bit when you hand your credit card to the person at the restaurant or the store? I mean, it's why, you know, we're skeptical. From friends to Facebook, I don't need to talk about that, right? From secretaries to spouses, even sometimes spouses with their secretaries. I mean, come on, we're just talking truth here. From government to God. And you see, here's the thing, you know, we have a coin that says, in God we trust, a dollar bill, a paper money that says, in God we trust. But you see, what's happening is when trust gets eroded, and it's eroded in other relationships, what happens is that also bleeds over into our relationship with God. It's bound to. When you live in a society where trust is eroding, when so many people have misused or betrayed trust, it's bound to sink in or seep in to even your ability to trust God or not. And you got to be aware of that, right? It really is important, because the question that we're going to look at today for all of us is this: am I trusting God? Am I trusting God? Let's face it, you know, trusting God is hard when we see so much trouble in the world, when we see so much hardship, so much tragedy, and so much evil. It's natural to wonder a couple of things, like the common one is, where is God? Is he doing anything? Can I trust him? And what can I trust him to do? Isn't that a fair question that everybody really wants to know? What can I trust God to do in my life? So you've heard this story about the man that was walking and I'll modernize it, texting, so he wasn't paying attention. And he walks and slips off the edge of a cliff, and he finds one branch to hang on to. And he's out by himself, so he's crying and screaming his full head off, but nobody's there to listen. So he cries out to God, God, help me! And then he hears, of course, this big booming voice. This is God. It'll be okay. God, is that you? Yes, it's me. Do you trust me? Yes, God, I trust you. Thanks for showing up. He said, good. Let go. What? Let go. God, yes. Let go. Yes. He's quiet for a long time. Then he yells, is there anybody else up there? Right? I mean, it's the classic illustration of when and what we will trust God with, you know? Are you ever afraid in your life that God may ask too much of you, for example? Have you ever thought about that? What is God going to ask for me? Can I ask you this? What would be too much? Can you ponder that this morning? What would be too much? You know, if God shows up and asks something of you, when would it, in your mind, cross the line that it would be too hard to trust God with that step? You know, back in the 1860s, there was actually an acrobat that strung that high wire across Niagara Falls. And the story is reported that a party of royalty from Britain was there at Niagara Falls and watched Blondin, was his name, cross this tightrope. And as he did, he came back and picked up a wheelbarrow. Do you remember this story? And he takes the wheelbarrow across and back again. He has a little dog with him, so he puts the dog in the wheelbarrow, takes it, and the crowd is going crazy, you know, just applauding. And he comes back over to the other side, and there's the Duke of England there, one of the dukes. And so this is a true story. It's in, you can Google it. He says to the Duke, he says, do you think I can do it one more time? And of course, the Duke says, sure. So you really think I can do it one more time? Yes, I know you can do it. Go for it. He says, okay. Takes the dog out and says, you jump in. That was too much. Right? It was one thing to think, oh, I think you can do it. I have faith that you can do it. But when it's me in the wheelbarrow, I'm going to think real hard, right? And the truth is, I might not be willing to get in. I don't trust you that much. How much do you trust God? Do you trust Him with your life, right? There's this great proverb that says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge Him and He will direct your paths. Or one translation says, He will make your path straight. You know, when we're following Jesus, we're going to be confronted with decisions, you know, of what to do in a lot of different situations in their life. No matter how old you are, how young you are, you know, there's going to be decisions that you're faced with. And here's what's going to happen. In those decisions, you're going to have a choice. God is all about choices, right? Free will. And so in this choice, you're going to see that there's going to be God's way, or kind of like we've been saying, what would Jesus do? Or there's going to be a different way. It may not be exactly God's way or what Jesus would do, but you're looking at it and it seems a little maybe safer to you. A little safer to you. Or it seems that it's going to be a little bit more lucrative, you know, personally profitable for you to do this rather than do what Jesus would do. You're going to be faced with that decision, and you're going to be tempted. You're going to be tempted to do it your way, to get your way, right? Even though, you know, it's kind of not quite right in God's sight. Are you following me? It's not quite, you know, what Jesus would do. But because you're not to that point of being able to trust Him that much, you're going to make the wrong choice. Unless something happens that you grow your faith and grow your trust, because faith and trust are two sides of the same coin, and you start to realize, I'm going to trust Him. I'm going to commit to that. I'm going to do the right thing. You know, Charles Stanley has that saying, if you do the right thing, you can leave all the consequences up to God, right? Yeah. But what does it take to build that kind of trust that you're willing to do the right thing even when it seems a little dicey? It seems a little, you know, scary. It seems a little unsure in your eyes, right? Are you going to be able to trust? I like this quote that I found. There are times in our Christian life when we cannot see beyond the next step. At that point, we have to trust God and venture out on the basis of what? His word. You know, the awesome thing about God, He can't lie. So, you know, we have to separate our past human relationships that have let us down, right? And we have to be able to say, God is not a man that He should lie. When God gives His word, He cannot go back on His word. He will not lie. He can be trusted. He's faithful. There are lots of reasons why Jesus came to this earth, but one of them was to show us that God is faithful, even to the point of being willing to give His life for yours. You know, we say sometimes to one another, I got your back. Well, you know, most of the pictures of Jesus show His front on the cross. But did you ever see a picture of His back? The scars that He took so that He could have your back? See, He did what He did to help us understand God is trustworthy. He's able to be trusted. You can put your faith in Him. Amen? But you know what? We read this great verse. I think it's the next one. Yeah. And you know, this is my life verse. I've talked on this before. This is my life verse. Of all the verses in the Bible, this is my life verse, Romans 8:28. And what does it say? For we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. Now that is what you call a conditional promise, meaning that you have to meet the conditions to claim the promise, right? And so the promise is for those who say, Lord, I have decided to follow you. I love you. I want to love you more, but I do love you, and I want to live my life according to your purpose that you have for my life. It means really making him the Lord of your life, doesn't it? Becoming a disciple, a follower of Jesus, committing to that. And when you do, this promise is for you. This is the one you can stand upon then. That you know in your life, God will work all things together for good because you have committed to love him and to follow him, his purpose. In this world, it will be a challenge. You'll see things happening as you do right now, and you'll wonder, do all things really work out for the good? You'll ask yourself, why did this happen, right? It's a fair question. And I want to tell you what, God is not afraid of your questions. He would much rather you come to him and ask, even in questioning, Lord, I can't see your hand. Lord, how are you going to work this out for good? Instead of just going off your own way. Right? I like this great picture. I thought I'd throw a little humor in this pretty serious message. Can you trust God when life goes sour? Right? Can you trust him when things in your life are not going exactly as planned, as you planned? Right? Can you? Can you? There's this wonderful thing about God. It's a big word. It's called sovereignty. You know, God is sovereign. What does that mean? That means that God is so big and so powerful that even working within human free will, God can work so much to make all things work together for good, to have things turn out the way he wants it to, even without taking away your free will. That's sovereignty. That's God's sovereignty. That's his omniscience. That's his power working so that we can say, you know, things like this. This was actually written on a cellar wall in a Jewish concentration camp when the Germans invaded. I believe in the sun when it isn't shining. I believe in love even when I'm alone. I believe in God even when he's silent. You see, this is where the rubber meets the road, isn't it? The times of challenge in our life, when we have to step back and say, do I believe God is sovereign or not? Do I believe he's powerful enough to work this out for my good? And the truth is, the scriptures help us, don't they? Because time after time in the Bible, we can read stories that, yes, he is faithful. Yes, he can be trusted. For example, there's a great story that I know that you are familiar with, but so I'll tell it really quickly. It's the story of Joseph. Do you remember the story of Joseph? The youngest so far, at the time of the story begins, of 10 other brothers of Jacob. Jacob. And the one who was favored by his father so much he gets the fancy coat, right? The coat of many colors, and becomes, you know, one that his brothers are not very fond of. So much so that when his mom sends him out with some food for his brothers, they see him coming, and what do they do, church? They conspire to kill him. One of the brothers, you know, Reuben, kind of tries to talk a little sense to them. And, you know, listen to this. Just then, this Midianite party is coming through where they're at, heading down into Egypt, right? So one of the brothers has a great idea. Instead of kill him, we will sell him. So he gets sold into slavery, right? And the guy that buys him is an Egyptian right, named Potiphar. And so Potiphar sells him to be his house servant, right? And Potiphar has a wife. Somebody else say it so I won't have to. Who is, yeah, not only that, but who else was good looking? Joseph. So what happened? She, that's probably a good way to put it. She makes a move on it. Kim says. But Joseph, being a man of God, a man of integrity, a man of character, trusting God, he doesn't give in. He actually pulls away, leaving his coat behind. Now, a woman scorned, you know what that's like, right? So the husband comes home, and she makes up the story what? That he tried to make a pass at her. And so Potiphar, what he's going to do, he sends Joseph to jail, to the Egyptian prison. Now, just make sure you understand why I'm telling this story. This is a story of God's providence, God's sovereignty, God's hand, even when you can't see it at the time, right? Working all things together for good. How powerful is this story? For in the jail, Joseph is put there with the cupbearer and the baker of Pharaoh, of the king. Now, they were put there because Pharaoh had heard of a conspiracy to take his life. But he didn't know which one of the two was guilty. While they're in prison, you know what happens. These guys have a dream, both of them, and they don't know what it means. So Joseph befriended them, and Joseph says, well, God can tell you the meaning of those dreams. So Joseph prays and interprets their dream. And what he says actually comes true. The baker, right? The cupbearer is restored to his position. The last thing Joseph says, of course, to the cupbearer, remember me. But he forgets. There, Joseph's still in prison. But the story is interesting because when you read the details, Joseph still had a good attitude, so much so that he was promoted within the prison by the prison guard, by the warden, right? Good attitude. So even though he's still forgotten in the cupbearer's mind, God is with him. So much so that just at the right time, that's a good word, right? Just at the right time, God's timing, right? What happens is Pharaoh has this crazy, crazy dream. And in the dream, right, Pharaoh's the only one that knows it. It's about seven skinny cows and seven fat cows. Do you remember? And so he goes to his sorcerers, wise men, you know, all those guys in Egypt, and he says, tell me my dream. He says, well, tell us your dream and we'll interpret it for you. That's what they were used to doing. Well, you know, when you do that, you could make up anything you want. Am I right? You could make up anything you want. This is what your dream means. But Pharaoh, he's a little smart. It's good to see you, by the way. How are you feeling? Good? He's really smart. So Pharaoh says, tell me what I dreamed. And they go, we can't do that. No one can do that, only the gods. At that moment, the cupbearer remembers God, Joseph, what he said. Right? Sends for Joseph. Joseph comes in. Pharaoh basically gives him the ultimatum, tell me or you'll die with the rest of these guys. Joseph says, only God, but I'll pray. You remember what happens, right? Joseph is given by God not only the interpretation, but the dream itself, and tells Pharaoh, you saw seven skinny cows, and they ate the seven fat cows. Pharaoh's eyes get big and says, what does it mean? Joseph says, I'll tell you what it means. You're going to have 7 years where there'll be an abundance. That's the fat cows. You'll have 7 years where the rains will come, the grain will grow, it'll be great. But it's going to be followed by 7 years of the worst famine. No rain. And so the seven skinny cows eating the seven fat cows means that those 7 years are going to eat up all the abundance of the seven good years. Pharaoh says, what am I going to do? Joseph said, if it was me, tell you what I'd do. Now that you know what's going to happen, during those seven good years, I would build storehouses and I would save all the grain you can, because you know it's going to be 7 years of famine. And you know what happens. Pharaoh, so impressed, what some people would call prime minister. He was the second in command to Pharaoh. Pharaoh put him in charge of the whole shooting match and said, you will answer to nobody but me, the king. Right? Now, the story doesn't end there, as you know. Why are we telling this story? To understand how God works all things together for the good. His sovereignty, His power, and His timing, right? So when the times get rough, the famine hits, and there's no food anywhere except in Egypt, so Joseph's brother, family back home, Jacob and his brothers, by the way, there's another one born by then, and now who's going to tell me what the name of the youngest child was going to be? Benjamin. Very good, Amy. Hey, Benjamin. So what happens is Jacob sends a couple of the brothers down to Egypt to buy food because they heard that that's the only place there is it. There's food to buy. So he goes down. Joseph is dressed like an Egyptian, so they don't recognize him. But he recognizes them. Now, to speed the story up so we can get to the key point is Joseph finally reveals himself to his brothers, right? His brothers are worried because now they think, well, we sold him into slavery. He's in power. He's going to kill us, right? Revenge. Joseph makes these powerful statements that basically says, what you meant for harm, God worked together for good. You see it? But it took a while, didn't it? But do you realize the result of it? That Jacob's whole family was saved. They brought him down. They lived in the land of Goshen. They lived in prosperity and health. Joseph took care of them. Joseph is a type of redeemer. He's a type of Christ in the Old Testament, right? Powerful story. What's the end of the story? The whole family is saved because of God's faithfulness and the ability of a young man to trust God. Right? God's timing. Let's talk about that for a second. So if faith means forsaking all, I trust Him. Trust means total reliance upon spiritual timing, right? Total reliance upon spiritual timing. You see, that's what's hard for us. You know, we want everything to come in place right now. We want out of the problem immediately when it comes, right? And so we're not realizing that behind the scenes, God is always at work. God is working all things together for good. You know, there's only two ways to really experience that kind of power in your life, that kind of evidence of God's sovereignty, evidence of His faithfulness. There's only two ways. Number one, it really means that you got to confess your need for God, your reliance upon Him at all times. No. You know, the longer I walk with God, the more I just cry out to Him and say, Lord, I need You every moment of every day. I rely upon You for every breath. But the second way that I want to challenge you with this morning to experience this kind of power and faithfulness is to actually be willing, with God's leading, to attempt things that are beyond you. You know what I mean? That are bigger than you can pull off on your own power. And then watch as you are led to see God show up and do exceedingly abundantly more than you could ever ask. That's our God. And I'm here to stand up and tell you today, He is faithful and He can be trusted with all your life. You know, as we close this morning, I'd like Kim just to play that song that I asked her to play, and she played in our worship set this morning. You know, be still my soul and trust in Him. The wind and waves still know His name. And you know, I just want to challenge you with this message this morning to apply it to where you're at, to apply it to the things going on in your life, and then just to release to God the faith to say, I will trust You. I will follow You. And to hear Him say, fear not, I am with you. We have a great God, church, don't we? We have a great God. Hey, let's just act upon this message today and just allow God to speak to your heart. Take away fear. replace it with faith. Let's just take this opportunity also to allow God to speak to us that He's here with you right now. And He'll be with you whatever it is that you're going through or will go through. Even the storms, right? Even in the storms, the wind and waves still know His name. Amen. You can stay seated, you can stand, you can come to the altar, whatever you want this morning. We're just going to worship a little bit to close our service.